Welcome to another episode of the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's the award-winning Pat Johnston.
Oh, yeah! Welcome to another installment of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. I am Pat Johnston, and man, did I have a great time spending last Friday afternoon in the D with my dad for day two of the NFL draft. It was awesome. Now, we didn't stick around for the actual picks because, well, we wanted to get back to the house and watch it comfortably on the couch and where I could have my own bathroom too. But even Friday afternoon, I mean, that was just one gigantic party. There was no drafting or anything, but the NFL experience and just the entire downtown, man, was that entire weekend just one giant success for the city of Detroit and for the state of Michigan. I'll have more thoughts on my experience in Detroit last weekend and how there's certainly a revived spirit happening there. I mean, that place was vibrant. It was hopping when I was there on Friday afternoon. And that's fantastic because we need a strong Detroit to have a strong Michigan. However, that doesn't mean there aren't still some massive improvements needed, the most important being improved transit. If Detroit is going to make a serious move into the future, it needs improved transit. I know I've said it in the past, I know I sound like a broken record, but Detroit needs improved transit. So that's all coming up in the last call. Coming up in the second segment, as promised the last time I talked with her here on the pod, Kelly Van Genhoven is back to talk with me about the big recall elections happening in Delta County this coming Tuesday, May the 7th. Now, Kelly is running for the County Commission District 4 seat, and she's running as a Democrat to unseat the extreme right-wing MAGA County Commission chair named David Moyle. In fact, three extreme right-wing commissioners there are all facing recalls, and it happened due to some good old-fashioned networking, messaging, and organizing. Local politics matter, everyone. I'm going to repeat that again. Local politics matter. This is where the right wing has put its clamps on progress in various areas across the state and across the country. And I think we're starting to really understand the importance of local politics on the progressive side. And it is such an inspiration that we've got people like Kelly Van Genhoven and the countless others who are refusing to give in to apathy in the Upper Peninsula County of Delta. So more on that here in just a second. Hey, not only can you get a hold of me via email, that's leftoflansing@gmail.com, or follow me on Twitter at leftoflansing, or find me on the gram, or follow me on Facebook, or is that friending on Facebook? That's right. You can now also find episodes of Left of Lansing on YouTube. That's right. I just started sharing some episodes on the YouTube. So if you're perusing videos on how to cook a scrambled egg or how to make hospital corners on a bed or how to best wrap gifts, those are all videos, by the way, I've watched. No judging. So while you're watching videos or whatever videos while you're on YouTube and you realize all of a sudden, wait a second, I haven't caught the latest episode of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. Well, guess what? You can find me right there on the YouTube. So please check it out and subscribe to Left of Lansing on YouTube while you're there. And of course, subscribe to Left of Lansing wherever you get your podcast. And please give it a good review too. And you can't also forget to subscribe to leftoflansing.com since that's another place where you can get a full archive of all the episodes through the years, my weekly musings and writing, and also the Friday shorts. Now look, I know I failed at getting a Friday short out to you last week, but I was busy at the NFL draft, so I will have a brand new Friday short this week, I promise you. Now, before I bring Ms. Van Genhoven back here on the podcast, I wanted to praise Michigan Advance reporter and friend of the pod, John King, for some more stellar follow-up reporting on where in the world Florida Mike Rogers lives nowadays. Now, in case you're listening for the first time, I call him Florida Mike Rogers because after serving about 15 years as a Republican congressman from Michigan's 8th District, which ran from roughly northern Oakland County to Clinton County, by the way, good job gerrymandering there, Michigan Republicans, Rogers decided to retire from Congress and move to Florida where he worked as a defense lobbyist. Look, I am certain that all the years that Florida Mike served as the Intelligence Committee chair in the House, I'm sure that had nothing to do with him becoming a defense lobbyist. I'm certain that was all coincidental. Come on. But after being away from the state for almost a decade, Florida Mike Rogers wants to become Michigan's next United States Senator, taking longtime Democratic Senator Debbie Stabenow's seat. Stabenow's retiring at the end of the year. Florida Mike has no idea whatsoever what has been happening in this state. I mean, as I talked about last month, he didn't even know what Prop 3 was about as Michiganders passed it to cement abortion rights in our state's constitution. He didn't even know what that was. But after collecting some cash, thanks to the revolving door in D.C. between lawmakers and lobbyists, Florida Mike is ready to get back in power in Michigan. However, there's just a slight problem right now. As John King reports, not only is Rogers still registered to vote in his home state of Florida, he doesn't really have a home yet here in Michigan. In Mr. King's brand new story in Michigan Advance titled, "A New House is Being Built for Mr. Rogers in His Not Yet Neighborhood," it showcases the White Lake Township home owned by Florida Mike has been demolished, with a new home under construction in its place. Now, Mr. King reported back in January how Florida Mike and Florida Mrs. Mike bought a one-bedroom home in White Lake Township, but they never lived in it. Never lived in it. And instead, were living at his sister-in-law's place near Brighton. And let me quickly just read this part of the story from John King, which I'll give you a link to at leftoflansing.com. And here I quote, "At the time, Rogers' campaign provided copies of Oakland County permits to plug an on-site well and install a new one at the home, which had undergone $100,000 in renovations prior to its sale. But as of this past Tuesday morning, the old house was gone and the cement foundation for a new structure was in place. There were no workers or active construction visible at the time. A sign on the property indicated the construction was being handled by EBI Incorporated, a home building company owned by Rogers' brother, Bill Rogers." Huh, isn't that nice? Anyway, Mike Rogers' campaign spokesman Chris Gustafson confirmed for the Advance that Rogers was still staying at the Genoa Township home of his sister-in-law, with plans to move into the White Lake Township home once it was completed, although no timeline was provided. Well. On top of all of that, as King reports, Rogers still owns a home in Cape Coral, Florida. So he's still registered to vote there. He still has a home there. Why didn't Mike just stay in Florida to practice his born-again brand of fascist MAGA Christian nationalism? Why did he have to come back here to do it? His real home, his heart, is with Florida. I mean, Mike, Florida Mike, sorry. Please, go back there. Go back there. You serve no purpose here. I mean, in Florida, you can at least wine and dine with your buddy, dear leader, celebrating how there's now a draconian 6-week abortion ban down there. And then you guys can scheme all you want on trying to make abortion illegal across the country if he wins. If dear leader wins. And that will happen. That will happen if he wins. You see, dear leader Trump already endorsed Florida Mike for the Republican Senate primary, already pushing out people like pitiful Peter Meyer, who folded up his candidacy this week. Rogers will now face former independent congressman Justin Amash, physician Sherry O'Donnell, and businessman Sandy Pensler. On the Democratic side, Congresswoman Alyssa Slotkin, actor Hill Harper, and businessman Nasir Baydoun are vying for the nomination. Now, do we have any evidence that Florida Mike has slept one night in his sister-in-law's house? Do we? I don't know that to be true. How do we know it's true? I'm just asking questions. I feel like I'm Tucker Carlson. Oh, that's so easy. I'm just asking questions. I don't have to prove anything, but I'm just asking questions. Isn't this just part of the Republican playbook? It really is. I mean, we've seen it in other states where they grab out-of-towners with known names to come into a state, and they think they're going to win a big race because of it. Dr. Oz thought so in the Pennsylvania Senate race a couple of years ago. But dear leader only goes for known quantities, and so he endorsed Florida Mike, thinking that'll make all the difference here. And in return, Florida Mike has kissed dear leader's ring, even though he was a former FBI guy who MAGA dislikes in the worst way, you know, because they consider those guys to be the deep state. Florida Mike is keeping close to dear leader, despite the fact he once criticized dear leader's love for Russian President Vladimir Putin and declared that dear leader's politics were, quote unquote, destructive. Florida Mike even said a few years ago that he would not support Dear Leader in 2024. Ah, but my, how things have changed. You see, a little bit of fascism is A-OK in Florida Mike's book, just as long as it helps him gain some power. And make no mistake, if it helps him make a little more cash for his Defense Department buddies. That's socialism for you, everyone. That is what socialism is, and that's what you'll get from Florida Mike Rogers. It's all about grabbing power and enforcing their extreme views on everyone else. We're seeing those same extreme views pop up in various places across the state, in city and county commissions, and even on school boards. We've seen right-wing commissioners try to stop farmers, for instance, from being part of the clean energy movement that's happening here in the state. And that's why Michigan Democrats in the legislature last year, along with Governor Gretchen Whitmer, passed as part of their clean energy bills the right for farmers to take part in large renewable energy projects such as solar and wind. They want to be able to make some money and use their land to make some money. The law now says that city and county commissioners cannot block farmers from choosing what they want to do with their own land. Republicans always claimed, always, as long as I can remember, that they cared about the farmers. They cared so much about the family farms. Same with the Michigan Farm Bureau Association. Oh, yes, they cared about the farms. But as we just learned, that is not the case. So instead of these extreme right-wing county commissions or city commissions of blocking these efforts, the Michigan Public Service Commission now has the power to help a farmer if the farmer wants to save their land and enrich their land by using it for a clean energy project. You see, it's Democrats who care about the family farmers. It's Democrats who are trying to save the lands for these family farmers. However, there is a corporate right-wing consortium that's trying to overturn that law via petition efforts to get a repeal of that law on this year's ballots. And that's how far Republicans are willing to go to hurt the farming community. They want them to feel pain because they have some kind of extreme viewpoint, like Dear Leader, that wind turbines cause cancer. But that's why we need sanity. That is why sanity needs to be restored on the local levels across the state. For example, I've talked at length about the extreme Christian Nationalist Brigade calling itself Ottawa Impact, which is the majority on the Ottawa County Board of Commissioners along Lake Michigan. Now, I've had progressive activist in Ottawa County, Joe Spaulding, here on the show to highlight how destructive that extremism has been for his county. And by the way, I have to ask Joe if he wants to come back on later on this month. That would be a great show. Anyway, there's a recall effort now happening on the Ottawa County Commission, where one of the right-wing Ottawa Impact commissioners could be out of a job this coming May 7th. Commissioner Lucy Ebel is facing a recall challenge from Christian Kleinhans in District 2 of that county. The recall effort was an arduous one, but thanks to so many good people and hard fighters who just want to bring some sanity and goodness back to their local government and all those volunteers and people who care about Ottawa County, they were able to get the recall on the ballot. This is the first step because you know what? Win or lose, the cornerstone has been placed for the future. Organizing, networking, and hard work is the only way to blunt the far right wing's power in local government. And that's why the recall elections up in Delta County are just as important. The Upper Peninsula, as I recall, used to vote blue more often than not, but it hasn't done that lately. And that's what's led to this extreme MAGA type, this extreme MAGA fashion to grab control of the county commission up there. And once they got power, the extreme majority quickly ousted the county administrator for no reason whatsoever other than she was qualified. That created chaos. And through a lack of transparency, more chaos ensued. Instead of working for the people, it seems like the only thing the extreme majority on the Delta County Commission want to do is make government ungovernable. And as we're getting close to this major, major election on May 7th, the extreme MAGA supporters for these three commissioners show up to meetings spouting this kind of stuff. Just listen.
Critical race theory is another term for color revolution theory. It's propaganda. Its purpose is to get us to fight each other so that they can easily take control of us. Hitler used this tactic to brainwash a whole generation of people, and we know of the genocide that took place there. Socialism, Marxism, and communism all have the same outcome. Do you want our children to witness this? I don't have time to read this, but you can read in the New Testament, Romans chapter 1, verses 18 to 32. That is one of the most root causes of this. The coming months are going to be very important for our future. And remember, we are one nation under God.
Thanks to Delta County citizen and good progressive activist Dana Van Eflin for sharing that video on X this week. You see, that's what's happening in Delta County and in other places across the state. A far right-wing Christian nationalism has taken hold of some of these county governments. But rather than just give up, a group of people up there banded together and refused to give up. They'd rather fight. And because of that, we've got a huge recall election for three Delta County Commission seats. Those trying to oust the three MAGA extremists are Independents Matt Jensen and Myra Crosdell and Democrat Kelly Van Genhoven. And she's my guest coming up in just a moment. You're listening to LOL.
It's the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. Need to give Pat a piece of your mind? Or do you have some stories you think Pat should cover? Email him at leftoflansing@gmail.com. And if you have Michigan beer ideas for Pat, he'll love you even more. Now, here's Pat.
That's right. The best way to get a hold of me is leftoflansing@gmail.com and also on Twitter. My handle there is @leftoflansing. Also, you can subscribe to my YouTube page to serve as another avenue to listen to Michigan's premier progressive podcast. Just search for Left of Lansing on YouTube. Okay. So about 2 months ago, I spoke with Kelly Van Genhoven, who's running for the Delta County Commission. Now, Ms. Genhoven has led an effort to not only get people more involved in what's been happening on the commission, but she also took part in a recall effort of three extreme MAGA right-wing commissioners. And that effort succeeded as all three are facing recall elections next week on May the 7th. Not only that, but Kelly tossed her hat in the ring to oust the county chair, David Moyle. Kelly and the other two candidates who are hoping to oust the other two extreme right-wing county commissioners are what I like to describe as an inspiration and the true definition of what I've been pushing here on the podcast ever since I started it, and that is local politics matter. Yes, national elections important, state elections extremely important, as we've seen here in Michigan, but also just as important, local politics, because I think for many years, the conservative side, they kind of have dominated on that side. And I think right now, progressives and Democrats are starting to pick that up a bit here lately. Now, in the Upper Peninsula, there are many up there who just refuse to accept defeat and just throw up their hands and say, that's it, I give up, all is lost. No, because as we're about to learn, it took hard work and some grassroots organizing to get to this point, as many in Delta County are fed up with the MAGA brand taking over their government. So with that, joining me is Delta County Commission candidate Kelly Van Genhoven, who also organized and co-founded the Delta County Citizens for Ethical Leadership, which formed shortly after these three extreme commissioners took over the majority. So Kelly, thanks a lot for coming back on again. I appreciate it.
I appreciate you for having me. Thank you so much.
Well, before we move on and talk about the election, for those down here, the LP, who may not be the most familiar with Delta County, what is it, Kelly, that you love most about the area and why you care so much about it that you want to fight for it?
Okay, so Delta County is situated right on the coast of Lake Michigan. We have the largest county coastline of any county in the entire state. We have had a history in the 80s and early 90s of being quite blue county, democratically run county. And since the Trump ages and maybe a little bit before, we have turned deep red. And so we are fighting our darndest to make sure that we try to get back blue as fast as we can.
I know you're not a political scientist, but you are from there. So I just like to get your take on why you believe that area has turned red through the years, because as you just reminded us, it used to be a blue area.
I think that we, being in a very rural area, a lot of people think that their national and state politicians are not speaking to them. They feel left behind. We have seen the destruction of our unions, and we are trying to rebuild our unions. We have several larger unions here in the county that actually have a lot of members who are Trump followers. So they're actually voting against their own interest. I think it's a lack of education. When we started this recall effort, we noticed that a lot of people would go and pull their straight ticket for governor and president, but had no idea who they were voting for from that level down. And we're trying to educate and inform our public that local politics do matter. And it is important that you fill in a bubble, not just a party.
Right. And you just said it. I've heard it from other rural progressives and Democrats I've had here on the podcast, and also from various articles that I've read, is that if there's one theme that a lot of rural voters are always expressing, it's that they are not feeling like they're heard. And it's up to progressives and Democrats out there to do a better job like you're doing to let them know, hey, we do hear you. Look, we're just a few days until the recall election. I asked you here for a few reasons, but I especially just want to ask you how the campaign has been going since we last talked, because it seems to me the responses you've been getting from people seem very, very positive. I mean, it seems like people are happy to know that they've got a choice and that with you, they see someone, Kelly, who just wants a functioning local government. That's really about it. But also, that you indeed care about the people you want to serve.
That's very true. You know, it's been a long road. I'm not going to lie. It's been 448 days since the three commissioners chose to fire our county administrator, Emily DeSalvo. And so, you know, starting the recall process, engaging in the recall process, educating people. My campaign team has been nonstop for those 448 days. We're coming down to the end. We just had a local forum here to educate the public on the candidates themselves, what we stand for, what we hope to accomplish. We were not allowed to interact with our opponents or use them as examples in any of our talking points, which was actually really nice because we could just focus on our own agendas and what we wanted to focus on for the county in the future. I think that, you know, coming down to it, the one major issue that we've had so far is the misunderstanding of the way the recall process works. In 2021, the language for the recall and the process of recall changed. Prior to 2021, you had to first oust the commissioner in a ballot form. So yes or no to recall, and then you would have a runoff election. Now it's all in one. So people who had participated in past elections did not understand that they were actually voting for the person they wanted in the seat. They thought they were voting for the person they wanted out. So we actually had to put out press releases. We had to put out stuff on the local news channels to let people know that if they voted absentee and they actually voted for the person they wanted out instead of the person they wanted in, they could spoil their ballots and be issued a new ballot. It's been a lot of bumps in this road throughout the entire process, but I think we're going to come out to a great outcome on the 7th.
Did you think when you were getting this all going that it would turn into a lot of an educational process that you're just talking about?
You know, I didn't. When I ran in 2022 and lost, I ran as a no party affiliate candidate. And so between myself and the Democrat, we split half the vote. And then Commissioner Moyle was able to obtain the most of the Republican vote. So he was elected with 43% of the votes. And so I was spending so much time educating people during that election on how to vote independent or no party affiliate, when I really needed to be educating them on what district they lived in, what a county commissioner did, why it's important to vote for a person and not a party. And so throughout this recall process, in engaging with the public and engaging and educating them on, you know, what district they live in, why it's important to keep local things local and not involve the liberal versus the conservative, the libtards versus the Trumpster, you know, things of that nature, it brought us all together. And what I'm finding is a much more engaged community, a much more educated county. And I think going forward with more people paying attention, it holds the commission accountable. They are no longer allowed to just do things behind closed doors, push it under the rug, act like it didn't happen, because there are so many people watching. Unfortunately, because of the amount of people watching, the three conservative commissioners have repeatedly called us angry mobs at county commission meetings, which is so untrue. We have been attacked on social media, which is something, of course, we see at all levels, but we're just choosing to remain positive. I am so proud of my team. I'm so proud of my community. I think we've done an excellent job in re-engaging our citizens in this process.
Yeah, I think it goes to show the importance of just reaching out and organizing, but it also shows like how it can be done in ways to make what you're representing kind of a movement in itself. I mean, it takes getting people involved and letting them know that they aren't alone, right?
Absolutely. From the very get-go, we at the Delta County Citizens for Ethical Leadership invited everyone to participate. We didn't care if they were Republican or Democrat. We just said, if you have a problem with one of your commissioners, if you think them firing Emily DeSalvo, our county administrator, was wrong, we encourage you to participate in our movement. And the outpouring from people has been astounding. We were able to collect, I think, 3,011 signatures between the three districts, which, you know, living in a rural community, that's a lot for us. Yeah. And we had people from the other two remaining districts who didn't understand that they couldn't sign the petitions and they wanted to. And so we've been getting support from everywhere. I've been amazed and I've found this entire experience very gratifying. So regardless if I win or lose on the 7th, I can say, wow, I did a great job and I'm proud of myself. I hope I win. I think our county definitely needs three common sense people who can work together with the other two sitting commissioners who just want to move the county forward. And I hope that the public has seen that we've put our work and our time in.
And I was going to say, I'm hoping you win as well. But I would say this, maybe at the very least, though, you're kind of laying the cornerstone into this whole movement that it just doesn't end, obviously, with this election.
Absolutely. I think that we have done a great service to a lot of people because we have successfully put three commissioners on the ballot. We have listened to people's concerns. We have taken action through the proper channels. We have done everything in the clear, in the open. We are transparent. We are honest on why we're doing this. Our words have never changed from the beginning. We were upset that they fired Administrator DeSalvo and we were going to do something about it. Throughout this process, they have said, oh, well, the people spoke in November. You're right. They did speak in November and they voted you in. Unfortunately, in February, you made a very bad decision and it is within our right through the Michigan Constitution to recall you. It's not done very often. So since this has been catching more wind, people have been reaching out to our group to ask, how do they do what we have done? How were we able to successfully get these three on the ballot? Both in other Upper Peninsula counties and downstate, people have been reaching to us looking for help. We're so proud of what we've done. And like you said, we've really laid a foundation of it can be done. We've said from the beginning, this is not about left versus right. This is about right versus wrong. And holding true to that message has been a great success for us.
Messaging is always key. Of course, you know, when these three commissioners won their seats, how did you know that even before they were officially seated that trouble was on the horizon for your county?
Sure. Well, we had learned that one of the county commissioners who ran unopposed, Bob Peterson, had actually approached another one of the recent victors, Commissioner Steve View, and had asked him to get on board with them getting ready to fire Administrator DeSalvo. He said that he wasn't going to take part in any of that, but he did contact the administrator to let her know that had happened. And so she knew she was on the chopping block from the get-go, which is highly unfortunate because she did a great job. The prior board had given her reviews and two of the three commissioners had given her ridiculously low marks in her performance evaluation. When she asked why, she was met with silence. When she asked for meetings or explanations, she was given nothing. So she knew from those two commissioners that she was going to be on the chopping block. And if that third had gotten elected, that she would most certainly be fired. And lo and behold, she was when that person took office. So we knew that there was trouble brewing. She knew it. And now things have just continued to escalate. And instead of doing things that could move our county forward and reach all constituents, they have gone from one piece of chaos to the next. There is always something that is causing divisiveness, whether it be their actions on social media or things they say at county commission meetings. to just outlandish statements when they're sitting in their meetings. Their most recent chaos causer is not funding our 4-H groups through the Michigan State Extension Office because of their DEI policies. They have decided not to help fund UPCAP for their aging programs because of their DEI policies. These are things that are just hot button topics. Instead of promoting diversity, equity, and inclusion in our county, they are standing up and saying, oh, this is the end of the white, straight, male, Christian world as we know it. And most recently, they put an ad in the local action guide saying that if people don't vote for the three patriotic conservative commissioners, voters are going to wake up the day after the election to a socialist mob. That's how ridiculous it has gotten.
All right, wait, I'm getting a headache. You just told me that they refuse to fund the 4-H program because of DEI? Really?
Yeah, it's very true. And, you know, our 4-H is very wildly popular up here. And our Michigan State University Extension Office is following the guidelines mandated by the state. So when you're saying as a commissioner that you cannot provide them with the 4% increase, which is budgeted, it's a budgeted item, and you're saying that you will not support that because they have a DEI policy that is mandated by the state, you are doing your own constituents a disservice. The problem is that the three commissioners who voted to table the agenda item, they didn't know what Michigan State University Extension's Office DEI policy was. They just knew that it was included, and they use words such as indoctrinating our youth. You know, it's so outlandish and so unsubstantiated, their claims, that it causes a lot of uproar. And that's what they're looking for. They're looking for these hot button topics so that they don't actually have to do with the work of the county. You know, we are severely understaffed at the county level. We do not have great paying jobs for our county employees. One of my goals is to attempt, when looking at the budget, to give our people a raise. I mean, we have county employees that can go make more washing dishes at a local restaurant than what they're making as a county employee. To me, that is just unconscionable.
You mentioned the word chaos when talking about the commission majority. Do you think that's the whole point, is that they just want to be there to create chaos and not really to serve the people at all and the county?
You know, I don't believe that to be the case, honestly. I think that they do have their own personal agendas, and I do believe that they will try and push their own agendas for their own benefit. However, I do want to genuinely believe that they could do work for the county. I just don't believe they have the leadership skills to do that. I mean, we've had a chair in his position since January of 2023, and 2 years for the prior, he was the vice chair, and he still doesn't know how to run a meeting. And so those basics that you cannot complete as a chairman of the board leads to people getting upset, leads to people getting disgruntled in the audience because they're having to sit there for so long. Our meetings generally last 3 hours. And the prior board that wasn't under the current leadership would have meetings done hour and a half max. And so when you do these type of things, it shows a lack of trust. It shows a lack of leadership. I think in their minds, they're doing what's best for the county, but I don't believe the county citizens feel that they're doing what's in the best interest of the county.
That is obvious. You know, you also mentioned transparency. Is that a major plank of your candidacy?
Of course. I mean, I want to be the person who will talk to anybody. I have made valiant efforts on talking to our local Republicans. It seems to be that the mindset more towards the middle of the road Republicans to the slightly right Republicans, they'll talk to me and they want to hear what I have to say. But the more moderate to extreme right wing will have nothing to do with me. They have called me a Marxist, a socialist, a communist, a libtard, a snowflake. I mean, you know, the same things that you hear nationally, I get on social media every day. But I wanted them to know that even though they don't want to talk to me, I want to hear from them. So I tell them that I'm a listening ear. I'm a calm voice. I will respect you because I am keenly aware that even though this recall is for 6 months, I want to hear their concerns. And I'm keenly aware that they don't want me there. And so I want them to know that they can still approach me after the hatred that they've spewed towards me. I think that's true leadership.
I do too. And I think anybody who just wants some sanity and a functioning government, they would agree with the exact same thing you just said. You mentioned that newspaper ad that your opponents threw out there. And I just want to read it for the listeners, if that's okay. It said, conservative area patriots to vote in these recall elections. And the ad also states how this vote is to save our constitutional republic. I think it's okay. You know, which is strange considering how this vote is strictly a Democratic vote with a small d, since majority vote goes to the winner and that you're representing the people of your county government and not Congress anyway. That's just beside the point. It says at the bottom of the ad, though, it says, do not allow a socialist mob to unseat three duly elected Republican commissioners. Well, here's the thing, though. A recall is part of the Democratic process, of course. But if you and the other two challengers win, then you'll be duly elected. It's just their way, I think, of just trying to delegitimize you for even challenging them, which I'd also say is part of the right-wing playbook. But also, Kelly, I think you are making such big inroads with the people, it's scaring the hell out of them.
I think so. And I wish they weren't scared. I wish they knew that we all had each other's best interest at heart. Local politics is very personal politics. I've told people this from the beginning. I ran for county commissioner in 2022 because I love my community and I thought I could do a better job. The person that I ran against was never at his appointed board meetings, you know, for, let's say, airport advisory or planning commission. He was never there. And I thought, gosh, you know, I could be better. I could do it better. What I've had to endure over the last 2 years for making that decision has just been more than I could have ever imagined. The hatred, the lies, everything that they're spewing about me. But I still hold my head high. I won't give them an inch because then they win. And what positive things could come out of them acting that way? They could have used my ideas if they would have talked to me, and they just refused. And so I really want people to know that it's hard to get into local politics because everybody knows everybody, especially up here. And the last thing you ever want to do is make an enemy. And why should we be enemies? It's also nonsensical. And I just wanted people to know that I could do a good job. And so I think I've been able to reach a lot of people through this process, through educating and informing, through being the steadfast person that people could count on. It's been exhausting, but I think I'm doing the right thing. And I think people will notice that once I sit on the board, that I'm here to do the right thing.
You know, I just want to say, I think what you and your group, the Delta County Citizens for Ethical Leadership, it's giving many across the state who live in red counties, such as myself, or red districts, it's given us some inspiration because, Kelly, you're sort of supplying everybody with a virtual roadmap on how messaging, how connecting really is possible. And that once you realize there's a good amount of people who want the same basic things and are kind of on the same wavelength thinking wise, you can really affect change, or affect change for the common good, because, you know, it takes a lot of time. It takes lots of mental fortitude, I'm sure, to follow through on your goals, right?
It does. It takes a collaborative effort. And I would be nowhere without my team. What I can tell people is, if they're thinking about running at the city level, the county level, even down to the school board level, you should always surround yourself with good people who support the same things that you do. My team is comprised of 8 strong women, 3 strong men who all have the best interest of my campaign at heart. You have to really mind block yourself away from the negative comments. And so, like, for social media, I'm not on it a lot because I want people to know that I'm reachable. You know, I want to talk to you on the phone. I'll text you. I'll meet you in person. But social media is purely for informing what's going on at the county level, what events I'm going to be at, filtering out the negativity. My campaign team does a wonderful job. We have to know that there are other like-minded people, because in our area, which was so red, our Citizens for Ethical Leadership group have become friends. You know, people who didn't know each other beforehand now have each other to count on. They're like, oh, we kind of felt like we were lost up here, like we were a lone soul. And now we have a group that we belong to, and it makes us feel whole again. And I was like, wow, that's really awesome. And it's also inspiring other people to run. Christiana Reynolds, who is the other co-founder with me of the Delta County Citizens for Ethical Leadership, just threw her hat in the ring to run for the 108th seat in the House, and I'm so excited for her. She's running as a Democrat. She's a young mom. She's a school teacher. She's going to do great things. She's going to be running against Republican Dave Preston, and I'm so proud of her. And we have other people who were involved in this group that are now stepping up. We have a candidate for our county clerk. You know, we have precinct delegates. We never want to forget about those people. I'm just proud, and we have to just hold our victories one by one, however we can get them at this point. I just really think that Delta County is on the precipice of something really good. And I think with five calm, level-headed people, not saying that we're always going to agree, I've already had tiffs with the two sitting commissioners regarding a few things, but just knowing that we will give each other that respect to finish thoughts and to clearly explain their points of view and follow the proper processes, I think we're going to regain the trust of our constituents. And that's what needs to happen. The trust has been broken in our county, and it needs to come back.
Trying to do the right thing while not giving an inch. Kelly Van Genhoven, candidate for the Delta County Commission District 4 seat and also co-founder of Delta County Citizens for Ethical Leadership. Kelly, best of luck to you next week. And above all, thanks for just being a good person who just wants to bring people together, as you said, for the common good. So thanks again. Good luck to you. And I'd love to have you back on again sometime in the future.
I would love that. Thank you.
It's progressivism with passion. It's the Left of Lansing podcast, where Pat shines a light on Michigan's progressive movement. Contact Pat at leftoflansing@gmail.com.
What an impressive individual Ms. Van Genhoven is, and I do wish her and all of you fighting for the common good in Delta County the best of luck this October 7th. And same for you progressives and independents fighting for the same cause in Ottawa County this coming Tuesday. Kelly said something in the interview about the voters in her county and why some of them turned MAGA or at least, you know, stayed Republican through the years. I think voters just want to know that they're being heard, and most of all, they want to know that they have a choice. It's awesome that Kelly's friend on the Delta County Citizens for Ethical Leadership is running for the State House seat for the 108th district up there. Christiana Reynolds says that she wants to focus on improving education, housing, childcare, and economic development. And she told WZMQ TV 19 that she just wants to enact positive change that benefits all constituents. Not just for a select few, she wants to be there for all the people. Listen, everyone, run for something if you can. All of you listening in red districts or red counties, run for something. Get the foundation in place so that you can soon enact the positive change where you live and stop letting extremism run everything unchallenged. And by the way, Ms. Reynolds is going up against Representative David Preston, and I've covered him here on the pod because I believe he once said on microphone that he does not believe in climate change. We don't need that kind of backwards thinking anymore. We must move on to the future. So run for something. Time now for the Left of Lansing last call.
It has been a historic week here in the great city of Detroit. We have shown the world what the Motor City is all about. And it is my honor to announce that the 2024 NFL Draft has now broken the all-time record.
Oh, wow. That was awesome when Governor Whitmer announced the Lions draft pick last Saturday in Detroit. And yes, she knew she would get some boos, which she did. She is a politician, after all. I mean, I thought it would have been far worse personally because I always believe that, you know, while I'm a football fan, that football fans in general tend to be a bit more on the conservative side. But as you heard, she got a lot of cheers. So give credit to the Gov for showing up and delivering the big news on how Detroit broke the NFL draft attendance record. And when she did, you heard the entire crowd in unison cheer, which just proves to my theory that sports can bind an entire community and state together. That's the beauty of sports. Also, considering where Detroit was just a decade ago, it really is beginning to make some big strides. Detroit just felt different, and I've been feeling that way during my last few visits of the past year. I was there with my dad for opening day at Comerica Park, and that again was just one huge party atmosphere with people hanging out and having a great time. I mean, we did some walking around. It was a cold day. It was snowing on opening day, which wasn't real ideal, but hey, We're Michiganders, just par for the course when it comes to Michigan weather. And you know what? It didn't dampen anyone's moods. We were having fun. We found a bar or two to catch some innings with many others, shall I say, highly spirited fans. It just felt different, though. Same with the NFL draft weekend. When we were there, it just felt different. And things are beginning to pick up. And maybe things feel different because, you know what? Maybe they are different. As good friend of the podcast, Susan Demas, wrote in Michigan Advance, the state's unemployment rate is below 4%. And she also said, gone are the days of the big budget deficits, followed by rounds of cuts to schools, state parks, and local governments. When Michigan's surplus hit an unheard of $9.2 billion last year, I tried to explain to some newer reporters how jaw-dropping that was after covering two partial government shutdowns in 2007 and 2009. I probably just sounded like their great-grandma spinning a yarn about the Great Depression. And you know, that is a great point. I mean, I remember those days during the 2000s when the state was in dire shape, when Detroit was in dire shape. But after getting through a bankruptcy, the city is becoming more rejuvenated. You can feel it. We've been told that people aren't feeling real positive about the overall economy, but you could have fooled me in Detroit last weekend. And as Susan said in her weekly newsletter, it sure is interesting that Michigan's economy is doing better with Whitmer than it did under her predecessor, Republican Rick Snyder, a former CEO who dubbed himself one tough nerd and was supposed to turn the state around. So I think that's why Big Gretch could strut on stage wearing buff sunglasses, because she's got a solid record to run on. And under her leadership and under Mayor Mike Duggan's leadership, let's give him some credit as well, Detroit is rebounding. Now, that's not to mean Detroit is problem-free. Far from it. There's uncertainty for the Renaissance Center after GM announced that it's moving across the street to Dan Gilbert's new Hudson's building, and at a waste of taxpayers, may I remind you. Detroit still ranks as one of the worst cities when it comes to asthma. There are places in Detroit where environmental injustice is happening on a daily basis. I've covered that here on the pod. Plus, there's so much that must be done on the transit side of things. Seeing people charging over $100 to park in downtown is not sustainable. I mean, I don't blame them for charging for such a rate. I mean, it is the marketplace after all. But if there's something that's got to change, it's creating more transit opportunities. For years, the late L. Brooks Patterson and his Oakland County buddies blocked any kind of transit projects for Metro Detroit, and it cost everyone dearly. Now, my dad and I, we took the A2-D2 bus from Ann Arbor to Detroit for the draft, and it was great. Not expensive, no stress getting through traffic, no stress finding and paying for parking. It was nice. It's just something that should become a feature everywhere in the Metro Detroit region. Freelance writer Jeff Watrick wrote in the Detroit Free Press this week about the need for improved transit options in Metro Detroit. And he said, "We remain a region perhaps unique among the country's great metropolises, held hostage by local myopians who simply cannot fathom the need for improving transit. Driving along M59, Ford Road, Big Beaver, and Gratiot, glistening parking lots, fronting vast shopping complexes, why would anyone want to take a bus when they could drive? Better to focus on something important, like when to schedule an auto show." And that is dead on right. If we truly want to move into the future and we want to begin reversing the population and brain loss that's been happening here in the state, we must spend more on transit. I mean, we are hoping to continue with these good feelings and tangible improvements that we've experienced in Detroit and the state. But we must remain smart and build towards the future, which some of those people booing Governor Whitmer just can't seem to understand. They can't get it through their thick heads. And same with the Republican Party. They cannot grasp the concept of the future. And that's why we have to make sure that Democrats keep hold of the state house. Because if Republicans win the state house this year, then the last 2 years of the Whitmer administration just go bye-bye. And Michigan will pay the price by doing nothing for the next 2 years, when so much has to be done. Oh, and lastly, don't discount the Lions' contributions to these good vibes. I mean, that helps too, trust me. Which is why I think, you know, it would be nice if they could have a nice Super Bowl run here this fall. Please, you know, guys, please, well, you know, just help us out a little.
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you're hearing is by Wander Beats. To hear the latest project, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site. Now back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan. It's Pat Johnston.
Well, that's going to do it for this edition of The Left of Lansing. Again, I'm on Twitter, Facebook, The Gram, and I'm also on YouTube. Share this episode with friends and fellow passionate progressives throughout Michigan and throughout the country. Thanks to Kelly Van Ginhoven for being on this week, and thanks to my good friend Rich for all of his work on leftoflansing.com. Until next week, enjoy the warmer weather, and remember, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan!
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston. Written by Pat Johnston. Researched by Pat Johnston. Edited by Pat Johnston. And hosted by, yes, Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. And thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. Remember to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.